deadline. China's foreign minister is in Tehran to hold talks with top officials and sign the 25-year-old Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Accord. Facebook shuts down the page of Iran's English language press TV news network permanently, despite its claim of providing space for freedom of expression. Also coming up, Brazil registers record 3,650 new coronavirus deaths. That brings the Latin American country's fatalities to over 307,000. It's good to have you with us. Our top story this hour, China's foreign minister has arrived in Tehran to hold talks with senior Iranian officials on bilateral relations and key regional and international developments. Wang Yi is on a two-day visit to Tehran at the invitation of the Iranian foreign minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. The top Chinese diplomat is also scheduled to meet Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. Earlier, Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson Saeed Khatibzadeh said Iran and China will sign the 25-year Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Accord on Saturday. He noted that the agreement has economic and political aspects. Wang Yi's visit to Tehran coincides with the 50th anniversary of the establishment of diplomatic relations between Beijing and Tehran. The US and Britain have called on Iran to return to, quote, compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal. US President Joe Biden and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson made the call during a telephone conversation. That's while Tehran has repeatedly urged Washington to lift anti-Iran sanctions and rejoin the deal unilaterally that it withdrew from. On Thursday, the Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said Washington is the culprit for throwing the agreement into disarray, but is trying to portray itself as the victim. The US reimposed sanctions against Tehran, leaving the accord in 2018. Political commentator Heinz Gertner says seeking a second nuclear deal is not sensible because there is no guarantee that the next US administration would not violate it again.
I understand that Iran is very suspicious about the US because there was this multilateral agreement and then the US withdrew from the agreement, and if there should be a new agreement, so what is the guarantee that the next president wouldn't leave it again? So as you mentioned, trust is very important, and I do think Biden has to build up trust, not only with the European allies, but globally. So far he is building up in the first place alliances and not so much multilateral trust, a global trust. So it would be up to the US to start saying now we are starting to lift sanctions. That's true. On the other hand, I have to say, this statement is a little bit stupid because it's a game of chicken. So at the end, it doesn't really matter who moved first. At the end, it matters that the JCPOA will be implemented in the original version.
Facebook has shut down once again the page of Press TV News Network, this time permanently, in yet another attack by the US-based social media giant on Iranian media outlets. Without any prior warning, Facebook informed Press TV that its account had been shut down and the decision cannot be reversed. The social media platform has on a number of occasions attacked Press TV despite its claim of providing space for freedom of expression. Press TV has repeatedly fallen victim to censorship, not just on Facebook, but also on other social media platforms, including Twitter and Instagram. Political commentator Scott Bennett says Facebook is guilty of silencing the voices that are champions of freedom of expression.
They will try and spin it as somehow Iran is, an enemy of human rights. It is an enemy of Western values. It is an enemy of some holy core belief that Facebook and their handlers have. But ironically, Facebook is guilty of shutting down voices that are are essentially champions of free expression. So I think it's a double hypocrisy. It's a disclosure of Facebook's a true fascism and authoritarianism. It reminds us that all of Western media, all of the mainstream media, the internet media that has been dominant with the Joe Biden left-wing Democrat, transgender, humanist, environment worship, fat fanatics, all of those people are fanatical about excluding opinions that talk about peace and sovereignty and stability and mutual respect, such as what Iran has been saying. And they're, of course, desperate to serve the Zionist Israeli plan to continue with war path.
Turning to other news now, Brazil records its deadliest day of the coronavirus pandemic thus far with 3,650 new fatalities. The Latin American country registered over 84,000 new COVID-19 cases as well. Overall, it has reported more than 12.3 million infections and over 307,000 deaths. Brazil is struggling with a battered healthcare system, a new virus variant, and a sluggish vaccination program. The country is second only to the U.S. in terms of infections and fatalities. Elsewhere in the region, Mexico registered over 5,300 cases and more than 650 deaths in 24 hours. That has brought Mexico's overall cases to more than 2.2 million and the total death toll to nearly 201,000. That's while the government says the real numbers are significantly higher. North Korea says the U.S. president's condemnation of Pyongyang's recent test launch of two ballistic missiles amounts to a, quote, encroachment and provocation. A senior North Korean official said Joe Biden's administration has taken a wrong first step and revealed its deep-seated hostility towards Pyongyang. The official added that the test was self-defensive against threats posed by South Korea and the U.S. with their joint military exercises. North Korea said this week it successfully fired newly developed tactical missiles. Washington condemned the test as destabilizing. Biden said the missile launch violated UN Security Council resolutions and warned Washington will respond if Pyongyang escalates its weapons tests. The launches marked North Korea's first weapons test since Biden took office in January. Frank Smith is our correspondent in the South Korean capital, Seoul, and joins us now. Frank, welcome. What's the latest you're hearing? You've got the Pyongyang essentially accusing Washington of encroachment and in essence saying our missiles are defensive, yours are offensive, and you've got your troops exercising on our border.
Well, from North Korea's perspective, according to Yang Nujin at the North Korea University here in the South Korean capital, the U.S. isn't really respecting North Korea's so-called right to live. Back in Singapore in 2018, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump made an agreement. Part of that agreement was that North Korea would not conduct long-range ballistic missile tests or nuclear tests. The other part of that agreement was that the U.S. and South Korea would not engage in joint military exercises. The U.S. and South Korea just wrapped up 10 days of joint military exercises. And so that really violated that agreement that Kim Jong-un had made with the former U.S. president. Also, the sanctions, the whole point of this for North Korea is to get out from under U.S.-sponsored sanctions at the United Nations Security Council that severely restrict North Korea's capability to trade in the international community and exercise its right sort of to be a normal country. The missile tests that took place on Sunday were cruise missiles. Then Thursday, it was ballistic missiles. It's likely North Korea will continue to escalate until they get something from the United States. They feel that they've already given something to the United States in that long-range moratorium. Many analysts suspect that's now off the table, considering these recent military exercises on the part of the U.S. and South Korea.
Right. Frank, thank you very much indeed for that. Frank Smith there, our correspondent, joining us from the South Korean capital, Seoul. Now turning elsewhere, a report by French historians says France bears, quote, heavy and overwhelming responsibility over the 1994 Rwanda genocide.
The French authorities pursued a policy that was totally disconnected from reality, a policy that bore the stigma of colonization. France aligned itself with the regime of President Habyarimana, which was a racist regime.
The report noted that Paris was blind to the preparations made for the massacre. It added that there was a failure on the part of France under former leader François Mitterrand, who had close ties to former Rwandan President Juvenal Habyarimana. The report concluded that in July 1994, masterminds of the genocide gathered in a safe zone established by French forces in the west of the African country. Kigali has hailed the publication of the report, calling it an important step. At least 800,000 people were killed by ethnic Hutu extremists during the mass murder. The findings are being made public after years of French secrecy over links to the Hutus who ruled Rwanda. Political commentator Mustafa Traore says it is important that the French government acknowledges the findings of the report on its role in the Rwanda genocide.
I think that it's been some years now that many people were saying that France was partly responsible for the genocide that took place in the 90s in Rwanda. And so there is some research. Now we have to check and see what the different research say. That's going to be one step. And if France is responsible, it is very important for the French government to acknowledge it, and if there are some reparations, to think about it as well. So I think it is a positive step forward. So I think that the report is telling the truth.
Violent clashes have once again broken out in the British city of Bristol as police arrest a number of protesters. More than 1,000 people protested in the city over a government bill that would give police new powers to restrict street protests. The latest rally was the third demonstration against the bill since last week. Police said some protesters threw projectiles at security forces. The proposed legislation has angered activists, particularly after a heavy-handed police response to a London vigil for murder victim Sarah Everard on March the 13th. Police had faced widespread outrage and criticism because of their response to the vigil. Staying in the UK, where a school in Northern England is in the centre of a media firestorm after suspending a teacher for insulting Islam's Prophet Muhammad. The school apologised to parents after a protest. However, many are unhappy with the school's reaction, claiming that Muslims are breaching freedom of speech. Robert Carter was in Batley to find out more.
In the English town of Batley, a local grammar school has caused major controversy after a teacher showed a blasphemous cartoon of Islam's holy prophet Muhammad to students during a religious studies class. Outraged parents of Muslim students began protesting outside the school gates on Thursday, demanding the school take action against Islamophobia.
The incident from Monday, 22nd of March, must also be investigated from a criminal perspective.
Yes.
Given that it was a clear attempt to stir up religious hatred. We also use this opportunity to call upon the entire British Muslim community to review the materials being taught in their children's schools.
Batley Grammar School reacted quickly, suspending the teacher, launching an investigation, and apologising to parents. However, the British press and politicians have opted to condemn the protesters instead, adding further fuel to the fire.
I was disturbed to see scenes of people protesting outside the school. That is not right. We shouldn't have teachers, members of the staff of schools feeling intimidated.
The creator of the universe, Allah, the most merciful, doesn't need a crowd hanging around outside the school.
Many details about what the protesters have been demanding are not clear. Press TV spoke to locals to find out more.
As far as I know, the parents have been very, very responsible. I mean, many of the protesters are not even parents, and the parents have acted very responsibly, very, very professionally, and they should be commended. You know, they're the basically the victims of this situation, but they're also the stars of this situation, that they've basically acted in a calm, collective manner. They've not made any unreasonable demands to the school. They've not asked for anything untoward to happen towards the teacher. They've been very, very responsible, and they should be commended for their stance and for their actions.
The school has acknowledged that the resource used in Monday's lesson was completely inappropriate and had the potential to cause considerable offence within the community. However, many online are now arguing that Muslims need to accept insults on the Holy Prophet as part of freedom of speech, and if they don't like it, they have to essentially lump it. However, with further Muslim action planned elsewhere in the country, and also the media continuing to hype up the story, it's likely that things will continue to escalate going forward. Robert Carter, Batley.
Now, the US president has condemned a new voting law in Georgia as a blatant attack on the Constitution. In a statement, Joe Biden said the legislation was a revival of the laws in the 19th and 20th centuries to suppress the votes of African Americans. He pledged to do everything in his power to stop the voting restriction efforts in the country. The law was passed by Georgia's Republican-dominated legislature on Thursday. Democrats say it is intended to boost the chances of Republican electoral victories by decreasing turnout. The law was introduced after people in the state voted for a Democrat in the 2020 presidential vote, the first in nearly three decades. Georgia is one of at least 40 states where Republicans are pushing legislation to make it harder for people to vote. And U.S. President Joe Biden has held his first press conference since he took office in January. Immediate reviews of the press conference ran mostly along party lines in a nation that remains highly polarized following a disputed election. Rami Mazahari is in Chicago.
After more than 2 months of almost unprecedented delay, United States President Joe Biden faced journalists in his very first press conference. Biden often read from prepared notes and spoke for just an hour. He selected the reporters who could ask him questions and avoided the conservative media, which has regularly asked that he finally engage with journalists without scripted questions or aides to help him.
Biden doesn't have any. Why? I think the speculation is that is very valid, that he is in cognitive decline. They're worried that he wouldn't be able to hold up over press questioning for a while. They're worried that he won't be able to hold up if he had to give a good big speech.
Biden fielded questions on changes to voting laws and the Senate filibuster tactic, avoided questions on gun control, and said he expects to run for re-election. Even though the country is in the middle of the worst socioeconomic crisis since the Great Depression, the mainstream media journalists allowed to attend awarded the largest portion of their questions to a problem outside the country's borders, the increase of refugees from Latin America. There appeared to be very little of the often extreme combativeness and skepticism towards Biden as there was towards his predecessor, Donald Trump. During the presidential campaign, both mainstream media and social media corporations were routinely accused of giving Biden preferential treatment. Corruption allegations involving his son went ignored, while many said Biden rarely faced difficult questions.
There's the right-wing press that, of course, are going to attack him. And then there's the press that support him, and they're not going to say anything critical of him. They're not going to say anything critical of certain Democrats either.
On foreign policy, neither Iran nor Russia was mentioned. Regarding Afghanistan, Biden said it would be hard to meet the May 1st deadline set for America's total withdrawal, but he also said that he did not picture troops still occupying Afghanistan in 2022. Keeping up his antagonistic stance towards China, Biden alleged that Chinese President Xi Jinping, quote, doesn't have a democratic bone in his body. Rami Mazahiri, Chicago.
Brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Facebook itself poses one of the biggest threats when it comes to children's privacy, according to a human rights organization. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Alan McLeod. The article is published under the heading Amnesty International, Facebook Plan to Target Children Incompatible with Human Rights. Please stay with us for more of Alan McLeod's article. Facebook has let slip that it is launching an Instagram service for children under the age of 13, who are currently legally barred from using the platform. Instagram's vice president of product told employees in a leaked communication that this was indeed the plan. Instagram's boss, Adam Mosseri, confirmed the leak's veracity to BuzzFeed News, telling them that his goal was to create a transparent and kid-friendly version of the popular photo-sharing app for children and pre-teenagers. Apart from the safety questions that arise in building an online platform for millions of children, the Silicon Valley company's decision has been condemned by many as extremely worrying. Facebook's very business model is built on ubiquitous and constant surveillance, which is entirely incompatible with human rights. By making users sign up to the opaque terms and conditions of Instagram, Facebook will be able to harvest huge amounts of data about children and create invasive, granular profiles that can last the rest of their lives, according to Amnesty International in a statement presenting Facebook's plan as akin to foxes offering to guard the hen house. Facebook itself poses one of the biggest threats when it comes to children's privacy, the human rights organization added, claiming that children would inevitably be bombarded with targeted advertising, disinformation, and incendiary content that is ubiquitous on its other platforms. Other experts characterize the move as one that would normalize the idea that social connections exist to be monetized and legitimize the gathering of data on children and minors. Social media companies' algorithms are expressly designed to keep users hooked and scrolling for more content. But an increasing body of research suggests that staring at a screen has negative health consequences, especially for children. One study found that children who were forced to cut back on screen time lost weight, slept better, and were less aggressive. The World Health Organization, WHO, recommends no screen time whatsoever for those under the age of 3, whilst others want that age to be raised to at least 7 and screen times to be limited for those under the age of 12 years. Facebook has made headlines of late thanks to some highly contentious privacy protocols. In January, it gave its 2 billion WhatsApp users an ultimatum: accept its new privacy rules, which were rumored to allow it to share user data with Facebook and others, or lose the service. The debacle caused an estimated 7.5 million people to switch over to more privacy-orientated Signal. Although, as journalist Yashka Levine notes, Signal's ties to the US government make its claims of total privacy highly suspect. Facebook has also been pursuing facial recognition software that it consistently misled users about, resulting in a $5 billion fine from the Federal Trade Commission. Last year, it also agreed to pay $550 million after illegally collecting Illinois residents' facial and biometric data. Big technology companies already colluding with the government and sharing or selling their users' data. Microsoft defended the practice, going so far as to claim it would be cruel to stop government agencies using the new technology. From launching in 2004 as a small social network service for students at Harvard University, Facebook has grown into a sprawling empire, consisting of apps like Instagram, bought in 2012 for $1 billion, and messaging services like WhatsApp, bought in 2014 for $19 billion. It is also the largest single news service in the world. Almost half of the adult-age planet uses Facebook, with their feeds filled with news stories the company has curated, with help from the NATO cutout organization, the Atlantic Council. Its marketplace is an enormous commerce hub, whilst Facebook also owns a huge advertising empire, using users' data to rake in over $84 billion in revenues from targeted advertisements in 2020. The company's chief executive officer, Mark Zuckerberg, is the 7th richest individual in the world, according to Forbes' billionaire list. Because of its economic and social influence, Facebook is also a very powerful political actor. In late 2019, it blocked the New York Post from sharing a story about Joe Biden's corruption and later banned Donald Trump from its platform. This cannot be because of genuine concern over a rising far right, as Facebook aided the neo-fascist Alternative for Deutschland, AfD, back in 2017. The Alternative for Deutschland met with American marketers at Facebook's headquarters in Berlin, Germany, the company providing them extensive details about German voters and allowing the Alternative for Deutschland to micro-target German voters with advertisements, helping them win 94 seats in the German parliament, the Bundestag, the far-right's best electoral showing since the 1930s. Ultimately, unless the government steps in, non-governmental organizations are powerless to prevent the increasing digitization of children's lives. It appears Facebook is hell-bent on hooking kids on its services, no matter what Amnesty International says.
food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and let us listen to a thought-provoking saying from the Holy Prophet's vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. A wise man first thinks and then speaks. A fool speaks first and then thinks.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Nasiri. Stay tuned. The term ma'ad has two meanings in Islam. One meaning is the return of my physical body on the day of resurrection to be rewarded or chastised. In this meaning, there is a place and time for our return which is unknown. The second meaning is about the return of my soul on the day of resurrection. Here, by return of the soul, we mean the return of the soul to our body. But why this return happens? Because people want to witness the rewards and chastisements of their deeds in this world and the other world. We are rewarded if we obeyed Allah's rulings on earth, and we are punished if we violated His orders. So the important reason for ma'ad, or resurrection, is to pay attention to the results of our deeds in this world and the hereafter. In this way, we are more cautious, and Allah's rewards and chastisements fall into the right place. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Nasiri. Please do log into our website, which is parsetoday.com. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, send an email to englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, God bless you all, and may Allah be with you. Thank you.
welcome to the lighter side of the news. It's great to have you with us. Artificial intelligence is fast growing and already touching many aspects of our daily lives. And now, a humanoid robot becomes the world's first machine artist to ever auction its own digital artwork. What is this world coming to? The robot called Sophia sold the artwork, which was in the form of a non-fungible token, for nearly $700,000. Sophia, who was unveiled in 2016 by a Hong Kong-based company, produced her art in collaboration with Italian digital artist Andrea Bonassetto. The artwork is a 12-second MP4 file showing the evolution of Bonassetto's portrait into Sophia's digital painting.
So, thank you very much for joining with me and supporting me today. The virtual, the real, the imaginal, and the literal. This kind of spirit of creativity and technology working together gives me hope that we can solve anything.
And we've been exploring Sophia's creativity on the side, but we really have been developing her as a platform and as a character more than as a work of fine art.
Since her activation, Sophia has achieved widespread appeal due to her unsettling human-like appearance, compounded with the complex ability to express emotions. She has appeared on talk shows and spoken at conferences about issues ranging from artificial intelligence to the role of robots. Hansen Company says Sophia now has simulations of every major muscle in the human face and can generate multiple expressions such as joy, grief, curiosity, and frustration.
A successful treasure hunt in China, archaeologists have made valuable finds in the country's southwestern Sichuan province. Researchers excavating the Sanxi Ju ruins have made new discoveries that help shed light on the eventful Chinese history. Some of the artifacts unearthed date back to over 3,000 years ago. Some of the most interesting objects include a 70-centimeter-long bronze ware and a ceremonial gold mask. More precious remains could be found there, as only 2% of the site has been excavated so far. In the latest round, over 500 artifacts were found. An Egyptian engineer has designed a robot to help frontline doctors do their life-saving work with more safety.
This robot is especially designed to help the medical staff during COVID-19 times. It is a medical robot capable of multitasks. It can deal with patients in their beds and help with chest scans, fever screening, and face mask detection.
Mahmoud's prototype robot is remote controlled. It can carry out PCR swab tests without causing pain. The robot is being tested in a private hospital for now, where it receives training to improve its artificial intelligence. Doctors say the ingenious invention has proven very useful so far, as it minimizes exposure to the virus. This Californian surfer is not famous for his surfing skills, but for his very special company on a surfboard, Pismo the Goat. The 80-year-old goat seems to be enjoying the waves a lot, even the very large ones. Dana McGregor, also known as the Goat Surfer, says he uses the experience for teaching children how to surf. He says riding with a goat on a surfboard has calming effects and will make children less scared of the sea and the waves. His students also describe the experience as fun and pleasant. McGregor started his goat surfing journey 10 years ago. What is the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear about a volcanic eruption in your vicinity? Of course, fear, chaos, or probably a plan to flee. But that is not the case with Icelanders. Thousands of curious onlookers flocked to an erupting volcano to marvel at the hypnotic display of glowing red lava. Iceland's Mount Fagradalsfjall began erupting late Friday after almost 900 years. Its lava bubbles and spurts from a small cone in a valley were seen piling up in a basin. It was a joyous moment for Icelanders, who are usually exhausted with chilly weather. Access to the site was blocked initially, but authorities then lifted the roadblocks under strict guidelines. the bravest of the onlookers found grilling hot dogs and marshmallows over the smoldering ashes. A Ukrainian fisherman saves the day with his biggest catch by fishing out an 11-year-old boy from an icy river. The boy said he didn't know how to swim and had drifted some 20 meters away from the shore on an ice floe while playing with his schoolmates. The fisherman threw his spinning rod to the boy and then reeled him in. Fortunately, the incident was noticed by two other men who were fishing nearby and came to help pull the boy from the water. The dramatic moment and the daring rescue from the Desenka River in Kyiv on Sunday was filmed by a fisherman and went viral on social media. And Japanese usually flock to natural reservoirs and parks during the cherry blossom season, which starts with the arrival of spring. But this year is a bit different, as coronavirus restrictions deter many to attend such festive gatherings. Flower viewing parties have been banned as the country is slowly reemerging from a strict 10-week lockdown. Still, people are defying restrictions not to miss the floral spectacular, but of course with masks and at designated areas. Hanami, or cherry blossom viewing, is an old Japanese tradition. In normal years, the appearance of the delicate pink flowers is the cue for families and friends to spread out picnic blankets on the cherry trees. Each year, it also draws many tourists from all over the world. A Colombian pianist has proved that animals enjoy music just like humans do. Mario Fernando Prado has created a relaxing atmosphere in a zoo in northern Colombia. He plays some of the world's most famous classical songs for animals. He believes that music brings peace and calm to any animal, from lions to flamingos. Zoo officials say the initiative is a wonderful experience for both animals and visitors. Of course, that's not the first time Prado does so. He has played the piano for animals in different places in the past. Now, the coronavirus may have shut down many social activities in India, but it can never stop the festive spirit of spring. This year, like previous ones, Indians are making preparations for the upcoming Holi festival, which starts on March 28th this year. This spectacular ritual runs for 2 days and is the second biggest festival on the Hindu calendar. When Holi arrives, people play with colors and try delicious local food. The celebration signifies the triumph of good over evil and is marked as a day of spreading happiness and love. Holi is also known as the festival of love and colors. Taking care of one's dental health is an absolute must, no matter humans or animals. A 14-year-old Siberian tiger has undergone a dental operation in a French zoo. The dentist took good care of the animal and even administered eye drops so that his eyes would not go dry during the procedure. Baikal broke his fangs 7 years ago while playing around, prompting the zoo owners to have her tooth revitalized and filled. The operation was successful, and the playful cat is now enjoying a brand new fang.
Now, while the world has been riveted by the adventure of NASA's Mars rover, a group of Swiss school children has been eagerly preparing their own mission to the Red Planet. The children have simulated a mission to Mars with the help of some space experts, including Switzerland's sole astronaut, Claude Nicoya. Their rocket is actually a bus with images of astronauts astride a spaceship. And their destination? Well, a Mars space station, conveniently situated, that is, in a secluded wooded area on the outskirts of Lausanne. In a bid to simulate a true space mission, all the children's meals consist of freeze-dried food and are put in an environment they don't know. The school principal says the experiment is aimed at validating what the students have learnt, including maths and science. Now, a volcano near Iceland's Reykjanes Peninsula erupts after being inactive for almost 900 years. The Icelandic Meteorological Office says the eruption was anticipated, though, following thousands of smaller earthquakes in the area in recent weeks. The office says the eruption posed no immediate danger to local people or to critical infrastructure. This comes over a decade after the eruption of another volcano in Iceland disrupted some 900,000 flights across Europe and forced hundreds of Icelanders to flee their homes.
It must be exciting to be to experience a real-world version of a game. Let's go to Japan to see what it's like to be Mario. Fans of the classic Super Mario games are delighted as Nintendo's first-ever theme park has opened in the western city of Osaka. Visitors can gather virtual coins and defeat villains while exploring the park with a smart wristband. One of the park's main draws is a Mario Kart ride around the castle of Mario's enemy, Bowser.
We perfectly recreated the world of the game. You can feel what it's like to be inside of the game and enjoy the life-sized world. You'll find piranha plants, and you'll see what it is like to be Mario.
Visitors can also meet life-sized characters from the Mushroom Kingdom and grab a bite in Mario-themed restaurants. The attraction is part of the Universal Studios Japan Amusement Park. Its opening was delayed repeatedly from last summer due to the coronavirus pandemic.
That's a wrap up. Thank you so much for being with us, and bye-bye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. State lawmakers in Pennsylvania are demanding an investigation into the public health impacts of fracking after a new study found evidence of harmful chemicals accumulating in the bodies of children and their families living near fracking wells in communities inundated by fossil fuel development. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Mike Ludwig. The article has been published under the heading Evidence of Fracking Chemicals Found in Bodies of Pennsylvania Children. Stay with us for more of Mike Ludwig's article. State lawmakers in Pennsylvania are demanding an investigation into the public health impacts of fracking after a new study found evidence of harmful chemicals accumulating in the bodies of children and their families living near fracking wells in communities inundated by fossil fuel development. Environmental Health News, a non-profit news organization, released a series of in-depth reports based on a two-year study of fracking pollution in Pennsylvania's Westmoreland County and Washington County, two heavily fracked counties in a state that has been at the epicenter of the shale gas boom for over a decade. Backed by an independent review board of scientists, watchdog journalists found toxic chemicals associated with fracking in air and in water samples at levels that exceeded safety standards and thresholds. The study also found evidence that people living near gas wells and other fracking infrastructure bear a body burden from fracking in the form of industrial pollutants such as benzene, ethyl benzene, styrene, and toluene that were detected in their bodies at elevated levels. Families living closer to fracking wells also had higher levels of chemicals, such as 1,2,3-trimethylbenzene-2-heptanone and naphthalene, and families living further away. Those compounds are linked to irritation of the skin, to irritation of the eyes and digestive tract, along with a host of health problems associated with exposure to fracking chemicals and emissions. With help from scientists and a reputable laboratory, journalists collected urine samples from the families and tested them for fracking chemicals and their biomarkers, which are chemicals that show a pollutant has been broken down by the human body. For example, one 9-year-old boy living near fracking wells tested positive for a biomarker of toluene, a harmful chemical that can damage the liver and kidneys, at levels 91 times of that seen in the average American. Gunnar Bjornsson, a 13-year-old boy who lives with his family in Washington County, Pennsylvania, tested positive for 11 industrial chemicals including benzene, toluene, and naphthalene on a summer day in August of 2019. Samples taken from Gunnar Bjornsson, his siblings, and parents showed elevated levels of biomarkers for xylene, benzene, toluene, and other harmful chemicals associated with fracking for oil and gas at levels much higher than national averages. The study's scope is small, 5 households within a 5-mile of fracked natural gas wells, and the authors of the report caution that more research is needed to show that the pollutants found in the bodies of residents came from the fracking industry. However, the study adds to a large body of research linking fracking to a variety of health problems, ranging from asthma to migraine headaches and to cancer, and increased infant mortality that has only grown as the fracking boom transformed large swathes of the United States over the past decades, and as fossil fuel production skyrocketed. In Pennsylvania, research shows that low-income and rural families are most likely to be exposed to fracking pollution. Over the years, the research documenting the harms linked to fracking, from the pipelines and compressor stations to the toxic radioactive waste created by all of this drilling, has continued to grow, said Megan McDonough, Pennsylvania State Director of the environmental group Food and Water Watch,